Hi.
Hello.
How are you all? Pretty good.
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 Yay.
Been better. I've been worse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, a little tired.
Welcome to Book Squad Goals.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the welcome.
On that happy note, I'm tired.
Nothing to perk up your
I'm
night.
Drinking some
like
some
a Book
wine.
Squad Goals episode. Oh, I'm drinking a hydration pack because I'm now 1,000 years old.
Gosh. What does your wine glass say, Emily?
It says, my book club slays vampires. And then the other side says, the Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires.
Yeah.
Shout out to Grady Hendrix, former guest on the pod. Hope you're doing well, Grady. I'm drinking out of your wine glass.
We got to talk about Grady once per episode.
Yeah. He actually pays us to do that. No, I'm just kidding. He does not.
Former and hopefully future guest. Yeah.
Come back anytime, Grady. All right.
Okay. Well, tonight, we're not talking about a Grady Hendrix book.
For one.
We are talking about When No One Is Watching by Alyssa Cole.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned this already, but I picked it because Emily recommended it to me, and then I read the Goodreads summary and was like, yes, I'm in. But before we get into that, this book is a lot about one specific neighborhood. And so I want to hear about the neighborhoods that all of you grew up in, and if there was a scandal or conspiracy theory, or conspiracy, not conspiracy theory, if there's a conspiracy happening there, what do you think that conspiracy would be, in theory?
I've never been more ready to answer a question.
Oh my God, yay.
So I grew up in a very teeny tiny small town in South Georgia, and we have a cult
nice
in our hometown.
Yeah.
Mary. I mean, and like, look, it's not like a cult, but it's one of those sects of Christianity that is so insular and cult-like that it might as well be, you know, like it's like, I don't know, like in the 50s or something, one guy was just like, oh, I had a vision from God that, and he gave me this list of rules of stuff we're supposed to do.
What are some weird rules?
They can't watch movies that are different from, that are like above a G rating.
Oh no, I'm out.
But the leader of the church would regularly rent porn from the movie
gallery.
Well,
if it's not rated, is that okay?
Loophole.
Well, he could do whatever he wanted, basically. Like, he would say, oh, I, you know, we're not supposed to go to the movie theater. And then, like, a month later, he'd say, I had a vision from a guy that it was actually okay.
God really has time to be like,
we went and saw
let
XYZ.
Me give a quick movie so, rec to this cult.
Yeah. So I say cult. That's a little bit strong. They're also, like, sort of insular to the point that they're all just marrying each other now because there's no new people that join. I think if something was to happen, they would be involved. It would be like, we would discover that like 20 years ago they killed somebody or something.
Ooh.
And it's been covered up.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty nice, but I just think they are most likely to have something going on.
If something doesn't happen with them, I would like to write the novel of it happening.
Yes.
Because I would like to read that novel.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go. That was Mary. This is Kelly. Okay. I don't remember if you said it was you or not.
So, I don't think. Probably not.
She was so excited to get to her cult.
Yeah.
This is Kelly. As everyone knows, I grew up in Florida. I was born in Miami and I lived there till I was five, but I spent most of my life in Orlando. And I only specify because these are two very different cities. Orlando, as you may know, is the home of Walt Disney World.
No way.
And yeah, so that's the thing about Orlando.
So stuff's
is, like,
already
I don't
going
need
on.
To like make something up.
Disney like, hides murders like all the time.
Well, yeah, there are many theories about Disney World, and one of the things that is supposedly true about Disney, and, like, I feel like I've looked this up, and I cannot confirm nor deny whether or not it's actually true, but supposedly, No one can be declared dead on Disney property. So they will literally put someone in an ambulance who is dead and drive them off of the property and then declare them dead at that time and location. And one of my favorite slash most horrifying stories about Disney deaths, there is a ride called the Carousel of Progress at Epcot.
Yes.
And this ride is basically there's a stage in the center that has animatronic people on it, and they are kind of describing the advances in technology throughout history. And the ride itself is like, it's like the audience is on a track and it circles around the stage. So, and then there are little like entryways between each section of the stage. It sounds more complicated than it is.
There's like walls that collapse.
Yes.
And they open up, the stage rotates, and then they close.
Yeah. Almost think of it like the space between a train car or something, as like the spaces between these different sections. I don't know. But like one of the employees who was working on this ride was going in between the sections, and something went wrong, and they were crushed in these doors. And apparently everyone on the ride heard them screaming and dying. So I'm sorry if that was upsetting to you. Oh my God.
That actually happened in Disneyland.
Oh, shit, really?
And after that happened, they were like, we need to move this ride to Orlando, where they, I don't know, didn't hear of this death.
Wow, I didn't know that part. Okay, so that didn't even happen in my hometown. But
I'm obsessed with this ride.
Oh my gosh.
I've been on this ride many times. I don't know why, because it's the worst ride. It's, like, not fun at all.
I think it's fun.
And there's this song that plays between each section of the, like, show, and it's like, there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of every day.
I have been on this ride.
And I assume that that's what was playing in the background of
as she dies.
First of all, that song sounds, like, kind of creepy anyway.
It is. Okay. It is creepy. Ugh.
Also, like, something's always broken on that ride, so you'll have, like, the guy on the stage, like, jerking.
Yeah, it's very, it's like, very obvious animatronic people, and it's, like, a family. And it's also just creepy in a, like, Stepford kind of way, because it's a very, like, white nuclear American family, and it just, like, shows them in every era of American history without acknowledging any kind of the negative parts of American history. So it's just a lot going on there. But that's one of the many Disney deaths, and there's more. But you know, wow, that could be a whole podcast.
I feel like you guys I feel like you guys had like built-in answers, and I just really don't. This is Emily. I grew up in Athens, Georgia. I moved there when I was 7. So basically, yeah, I grew up there. Wasn't born there, but, I don't know. I guess like the main thing about Athens is like, it's a college town with like a big music scene and stuff. And I mean,
what about the tree that owns itself? Do you think the tree that owns itself is up to something?
No, the tree that owns itself is very pure. That was like one of my brother's like favorite places in Athens.
Yes.
I don't know about this tree. I have not heard of this.
So, I mean, it owns basically itself. This isn't a conspiracy or anything, but like this guy, like, really
sweet.
Liked this tree. And so when he died, he put it in his will that, like, the tree would, like, basically, like, own itself. And, like, which means, like, you can't cut it down or move it or anything.
It's protected.
So it's protected. And so they built a street, like, around it. So the street goes on, like, either side, like, around it. And my brother actually lived, like a couple of, like, you could walk like 2 feet outside of his door.
Yeah.
And he lived like right over there by it. So,
oh man,
I like didn't remember my brother's address and I'm really bad at like directions. So like whenever I was trying to get my brother's house, I would just like put in my Google Maps, like the tree that owns itself. And I would like, I would go there and then I would know where his house was. Yeah, that, I don't know.
That's just a sweet story. It's innocent. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can say that, I mean, like RAM is from Athens, and this isn't like a conspiracy or a scandal because I'm sure everybody would believe this. And I'm sorry to Sally, my friend Sally, because she loves R.E.M., but Michael Stipe's an asshole. So,
oh, yeah.
Like, when I was like living in Athens and like going out to bars and stuff like that, like, if he would show up, like, I like, one time we were at the 40 Watt, which is like this famous club in Athens, and like we were sitting on these couches, and like Michael Stipe came in and his people basically came over, and he was like, they were like, Michael Stipe wants to sit there, so you guys have to move. So,
wow, rude.
I'd be like, tough.
So Michael. Not a scandal, but I don't know. Like, I feel like people like to hear when celebrities are assholes. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Giving you that. There Michael you Stipe's an asshole.
Could take it a step further and be like, would Michael Stipe do a murder?
Sure, why not? Oh, and I will say, like, here's another thing about Michael Stipe. I mean, R.E.M.'s great, so nothing against R.E.M. Like, I think it's totally fine for artists to be assholes so long as they're not, like, you know, assaulting people. You know?
Sure.
Or murdering people.
Not hurting like, people.
I think... Yeah. A lot of times creatives are assholes. They're just not very good at dealing with people. Yeah,
you can separate the art from the artist easily, I think, if the artist is just a dick.
Yes, you know. A lot of people are dicks.
Right.
You know, maybe if I were famous, people would say I was a dick. I don't know. Probably some people would. Anyway, what was I going to say? No, I can't remember. Oh, so something about R.E.M. They do like secret concerts in Athens sometimes because they're from there. And I caught one of their shows at Georgia Theater, which is small. Kelly, you've been there. Mm-hmm. But he had printed out pages with all of the song lyrics on them, and he had them like on a stand and was like singing, like reading the song lyrics. And I thought that was – I've never seen a singer – have to do that before.
Like, you don't know your own
song. And I guess like R.E.M., like they've just been around for so long, like I guess like I might need that as security if like I had songs from like 30 years ago, you know. Which
I mean, honestly, like I sometimes when I would perform back when I used to like be in talent shows, I would like just blank on the words of whatever song I was singing that I'd sung like 400 times, and I'd be like, what are the words?
I've just never seen like a professional musician do that before. Right. So I don't know. That's just like a fun fact about Michael Stipe is like the one time I saw them perform, he was reading his lyrics off of like sheet music or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. That's none of that is what you wanted, Susan, but that's what I got.
You know, I didn't even know how I was going to answer this question that I wrote until 30 seconds ago. So,
oh, great.
It's okay. And I enjoyed all of that. Yeah. So I grew up in Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is a town that's right on the Ohio River across from Louisville. And this isn't like in my neighborhood, but the river is like a big part of everything in this town. And there is a long, it's like right across the street from the river in this one part of Jeff. And it's like, there's this wooded area and there's some ruins of a building up there, and it's called the Witch's Castle. And it's like, you can see there's like separate little buildings and they've like kind of fallen apart, but there's still some walls up and it's really creepy. Well, I heard about this place when I was a teenager, and like two of the people I worked with at the public pool were telling me about how creepy it was and that someone had been murdered there a long time ago. So I start looking into this murder, and someone was, a teenage girl was murdered, but not there, but they, like, this group of girls had taken her there and, like, beat her and scared her and stuff while they were there. So she didn't actually die at this location, but it's, like, thought to be haunted anyway, and then also because of this, another thing. So we drove out there to experience the scariness, and it was really freaking scary. Like, we parked by the side of the road. I, like, at the time don't know these two other girls that well. Like, we all could have probably thought we were going to kill each other, but I am still friends with one of them, but and we heard a lot of noises and it was really scary, and we ran back to the car and, like, never went back again. But this, it was like a spot that was involved with a murder, and it's still there and allegedly it's, you know, haunted. So I would say maybe something with that, some actual witchy stuff. It would, because it was rumored that these people who lived there were witches. I need to read more about this because maybe I could write this book too. Yeah, so I'm hoping that there's, like, some witchcraft stuff going down there. That or Papa John is from my hometown.
That's a real scandal.
Definitely. Yeah.
He could do something.
Yeah, I was also...
He just looks dead inside. Yeah, just dead eye.
I was going to add, like, real scandals. Also Orlando, Lou Pearlman, and the boy band's situation that occurred. How he basically, like, scammed all these members of different boy bands, and, like, now he's in prison forever. So.
Yep. Well, Papa John went to high school with my mom, so.
Wow. Oh, no.
Did he go by Papa John then, like, in class?
But he started Papa John's at this little dive bar in Jeff that is still there.
Like, does your mom have any dirt on Papa John?
I'll ask. I've never really dug too deep on Papa John because he sucks.
At what point in a man's life does he decide to go by Papa is what I'm wondering.
I'm not sure. So there's one of those two things, I think, is just rich for conspiracy potential. All right. Thank you, everyone. That was fascinating, truly.
That was exciting.
All right. So, spoiler warning, we are going to talk about any and all aspects of this book. So, if you haven't read When No One Is Watching and you don't want to be spoiled, come back after you've read it.
It won't take long.
Huh?
5 hours.
It took you 5 hours.
Yeah, I read it really quickly.
Welcome back. Hey. Goodreads summary. The gentrification of a Brooklyn neighborhood takes on a sinister new meaning. Sydney Green is Brooklyn-born and raised, but her beloved neighborhood seems to change every time she blinks. Condos are sprouting like weeds, for sale signs are popping up overnight, and the neighbors she's known all her life are disappearing. To hold onto her community's past and present, Sydney channels her frustration into a walking tour and finds an unlikely and unwanted assistant in one of the new arrivals to her block, her neighbor Theo. But Sydney and Theo's deep dive into history quickly becomes a dizzying descent into paranoia and fear. Their neighbors may not have moved to the suburbs after all, and the push to revitalize the community may be more deadly than advertised. When does coincidence become conspiracy? Where do people go when gentrification pushes them out? Can Sydney and Theo trust each other or themselves long enough to find out before they, too, disappear?
Ooh. That summary pretty much gives away the whole book.
Yeah, it does. It does say one paragraph too much. But this does, that does lead into the first question. Because I do want to know how well this worked for everyone. So Alyssa Cole, this is the first book of hers I've read. Have any of you read any of her other work?
Okay. I'm aware of her, but I think I'm very underread in the romance genre, just in general.
Yeah, me too. But Alyssa Cole is best known for writing romance books, but When No One Is Watching is a thriller. It says a thriller on the cover. So how did this novel work as a thriller or a mystery for you? And was it successful?
I want to start by saying my initial reaction to this book before I was told that it was good and worth reading is that it is very much advertised like your typical thriller. I'm speaking specifically mm-hmm. of the I'm very turned off by the cover. The cover it's alone awful. Makes me yeah. think like, okay, yeah, this is a thriller. And I feel like they were working really hard to make sure people understood that this was going to be a thriller and not a romance. And like, even that description, like, I feel like maybe it says too much to make sure people know, like, it's going to be a thriller, you know?
Like, yeah, this cover has the vibe of like a book that I would walk past at Target.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I think that was on purpose. Like, that was the type of reader they were trying to get, is like the people who pick up these domestic thrillers, right?
Yeah. And I think that to go off of that, I'm beginning to wonder if maybe I just am not a fan of thrillers, because for me, as a thriller or mystery, this did not work. Not to be negative right off the bat, but I was not thrilled. I listened to it quickly because it was pretty short, and I was like, whatever, I'm cleaning. I'll keep listening. But I didn't find it compelling, because I felt like everything that happened was exactly what I expected. And I, aside from that, like, there's like a little bit to dig into here, I guess. But overall, I just felt like if the story and the thriller part and the mystery part isn't working for me, like, what is left here, you know?
Dang, Kelly.
A really hot sex scene is what, Kelly?
Was it that hot, though? I don't know. I know that I'm being really negative right away. And I do have – there are things that I didn't hate it. Like, but I – as a mystery, like, there was not a single thing that happened that surprised me, except for, and Emily and I talked about this, the fact that she buried her mother in the garden.
I was shook. That was surprising. I was shook. Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing that was surprising to me.
None of it was surprising.
No, it was like all of the characters were like, it was like so clearly like mustache twirling villains who were like, mwah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, pretty early in the novel, you see who the bad guy is, but like.
And it's like, I just knew exactly, like, it's like, oh, there's a guy acting weird out on the street. It's like, okay, obviously he's someone who used to live in this neighborhood, who this weird organization, there's a weird organization building a new facility in this neighborhood, and for some reason people are disappearing. It's like, I just felt like so, every step was so obvious to me, and like, I don't think that a book should be about the twist, or like, I don't think that like being able to guess what happens is what makes something good or not. But for me, like, there wasn't that much here aside from what was happening in the story that was interesting, other than like the neighborhood dynamics I found interesting. But that wasn't like enough for me to make it feel, I guess, thrilling, since that's what this question is asking.
I'm going to completely disagree.
Okay.
Because it worked really well for me. And I hear you. I don't think that it was completely unpredictable. But I don't think a lot of thrillers are completely unpredictable, or they're so off the rails.
Yeah. That they're unpredictable. Well, that's why I say maybe.
And that's looking at you behind her eyes.
Maybe that's why I say that I don't like thrillers. Because for me, like, if I can predict what's happening and the point of the story is the story, like, what's the point of me reading this, you know?
But I mean, it worked for me for the most part as a thriller because it built a sense of dread for me. Mm. Like, Sydney, you know, gradually finds out what's going on, and we're kind of there with her. And I was listening to this on audiobook while Todd and I were driving to see family. And it worked. Like, I wanted to keep listening to it. And each time we got out of the car to go to the bathroom or whatever and got back in, I was like, okay, so we're ready to keep listening to this? You know, like, it worked to kind of propel me through the story. I will say, I think that there is enough stuff happening that is not part of the thriller narrative that's also interesting. So it did work for me as a thriller, even though, like, by the end I was like, okay, yeah, I kind of have figured out what's going on, although it was horrifying to see it. mm-hmm. actually happening. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, it there was enough suspense and enough build up to the mystery that I think it worked for me. I'll also say, and this is probably the first and last time you'll ever hear me say it, the audiobook of this is really good.
I liked her. I did not like him. So I was always like,
waiting. I liked the voices he did.
I hate voices. Like, I hate it when he'd be doing his girl voice, and I hate that. I hate it when a man is like, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, or when a woman is like, and I've said this, I talked about this during the I'll Be Gone in the Dark episode, when a woman is doing her gruff man voice, and she's like, well, I don't think, blah, blah, blah. Like, so, like, the woman reader, the reader for Sydney in this wasn't doing that, and I thought she was very good. He was doing that for every single character.
He was. Like, but, like, he did the most for Kim, and I hated Kim anyway. So it was funny.
I felt like it was very, like, pointedly about, like, around Kim. Like, when I think about his girl voice, I think about Kim. I also listen to the audiobook. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. Yeah. Like, 50% of the books that I read are audiobook. I find multiple narrators very appealing.
Yeah.
Because for that very reason, because like if you're getting sick of a narrator, like don't worry, another one's coming. Yeah. And it kind of like breaks up the novel in an interesting way that I don't know, that I really appreciate. So I like that about it.
I would like that, but I didn't like him specifically. Like if a different person had been doing his voices. But Mary and I just completely disagree on everything about this.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think I'm a little more on Mary's side here. Not to choose sides.
Elaborate.
I read a lot of thrillers, and a lot of books that are like marketed as domestic thrillers do a lot of the same things and make a lot of the same moves. Which is why a lot of them are kind of predictable. And I don't think figuring it out necessarily makes it an unsuccessful book. But I didn't predict, I mean, eventually you know what's going on here. It's not like at the end, like a giant surprise hits you or anything, but, I did think there was a steady sense of dread, like Mary said, but there were also moments for me that were genuinely scary. Like when she's in the Uber and the guy like locks the doors and it, like not trusting your own like sense of something's wrong or like why is everyone acting like I'm crazy, that stuff scares me a lot. Kind of psychological element for Sydney was really scary to me and thrilling, dare I say.
It has kind of like a Rosemary's Baby vibe, and I always compare everything to Rosemary's Baby because it does it so well. But like the whole film, you know, she's like, oh my gosh, am I going crazy? Why will no one believe me? Why does nobody think I'm telling the truth?
Yeah, I think that because the conceit of this was so clearly that there was something going on, that there wasn't a second during which I believed that she was crazy. I was like, I know that she's not. I know that something's happening here. Otherwise, why would this book exist? So,
well, I think maybe that's why Theo is also a narrator, though. Because, like, you almost need, like, a dumb white guy to be like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this doesn't seem that weird or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then his girlfriend is so pointedly, obviously evil that it's like,
yeah,
it offsets that too.
Okay. And let me try to like gather my thoughts because I've been like kind of taking notes in my brain while everyone else is talking.
Pick a side.
And there are a couple of things. That... No. And I'm wearing my Libra shirt for a reason today. There are a couple of like questions that I think about a lot. And I think going back to like romance, for a second, because this author normally writes romance, and also, like, I've been reading more romance lately, and one of the things that happens with romance novels is, like, it's very predictable, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, at the beginning of the novel, you know, like, oh, these two people, they're total opposites and they don't get along, but, like, they're going to get together yeah. later, right? Like, obviously. Or, like, the one I just finished reading is, like, these two people are fake dating, but it's going to become real and they're going to have feelings for each other. Whatever. So, like, one of the questions I've been asking myself a lot about books is, like, is sometimes predictability not just, like, something we want to wave away, but, like, maybe even the point? Mm-hmm. And so I wondered that a little bit with this. And I also kind of feel like, you know, I think about that scene that you're talking about in the Uber. And I also think about, what was the other scene I was thinking about? Shoot. It was like on the tip of my brain. And
was it the, like, bed bugs part?
It's not the bed bugs part. We can talk about that too. Yeah. Oh, no. I'm thinking about the scene where, he gets drunk and he sees somebody yeah. in the apartment and, like, he doesn't have, like, control. 'Cause, like, obviously she's done something to the wine. But I think there are scenes like that that are about, like, loss of control or, like, not being in control that are supposed to give readers, sort of like a look into what it's like to be a minority in this country. That I think are maybe, like, more the point, or, like, more of, like, why it's supposed to feel, I don't know if thrilling is the right word, but, like, unnerving. And this book has been compared to Get Out, and I think it reminds me of Get Out in that way that, you know, like, when I saw Get Out in the theaters, like, one of the things that I felt is, like, okay, I'm a white person. Again, we're all white here, so yes. again, disclaimer and apologies. Right. But I'm a white person, and I'm watching Get Out, and I'm thinking to myself, like, I can't ever fully understand what it's like to be black in this country. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this movie is doing a good job of trying to, like, show me.
Yes.
Like, not so that I can understand, but so that I can empathize with that. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like maybe the point of this book is more about that than it is, like, being, like, unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I, like, so I guess to me, like, my question is more of, like, to me, again, like, I'm not saying this is how everyone should yeah. do it, but, like, as I've been thinking about it, to me, my question is, like, is it effective on that level? And I guess, like I said, I'm not picking a side, so, like, I'm still kind of, like, unsure of how effective it was. Like, there are some points, like the points I was talking about, where it was effective, and there were other points, like Kelly was saying, where the character of Kim, for instance, is just, like, so
yeah.
horrendous.
Well, just obvious. That it was, like, it's okay if your character yeah. is horrendous, but, like,
yeah. And, like, I'm not saying that there aren't white women like yeah. that, because there certainly are. But I think it would have maybe been more interesting if that character had been a little less
obvious. Well, yeah, it's, like, it's hard for me to understand how this person has existed in Theo's life for, like, several years or however long, and yeah. he has, like, no idea that she's involved in this insane conspiracy where, like, as a reader, from the literal moment you meet her, it's clear that she's evil. So
well, and, like, and also, too, just, like, as commentary on racism, yeah. I think it would be more interesting to point out the ways in which, like, yeah, some white people are overtly racist. Lots of white people are overtly racist. But there's also that racism that doesn't immediately yeah. present itself. And then you sort of realize, like, oh, this person is right. racist, and, like, even though they, like, aren't overtly racist all the time, what they're doing is still really harmful, which is, again, like, not, I'm not going to keep comparing this to Get Out because this isn't exactly like Get Out. It's doing different things. But one of the things Get Out did, I think, was, like, it was pointing that out about white people, right? Is that, like, that not all white people are, like, KKK hood-wearing racists. Like, there's lots of different kinds of racism, and that subtle racism, that liberal racism is, like, almost more harmful.
Well, it's insidious, and it's easier to get trapped and fooled by that kind of racism, because if someone is spouting out their hatred, you can think, I guess I'll avoid that person. But it's these other people who might be in your life who you really don't know that they would be like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we were talking about how this book is clearly geared towards, like, the target demographic is the, like, average commercial fiction reader. And I do think that, like, a huge portion of that demographic is like, suburban, white, like, women, probably in their, like, 40s, like, that kind of age group, who might not be as, like, engaged with these questions and these issues as, you know, people who are younger or, you know, more, I don't know, just, like, online or whatever, I guess, you know, people who are, like, paying.
Online.
Like, I don't know. It's so, so it's also something that I was thinking about that, like, you know, it's also very possible that this book just isn't for me, you know, in the way that, like, because it is pointing out a lot of things that are extremely true about, like, race relations in this country, especially about gentrification. Like, I live in Brooklyn, so all of this is very familiar to me as, like, a white person living in Brooklyn, constantly feeling like I'm, you know, awful and gentrifying my neighborhood, which is a historically black neighborhood, and then also seeing, you know, like, recognizing that I am also still poor and also just a renter, and I'm not, like, you know, building a new property or, you know, renovating a brownstone or something, and living in my apartment and listening to this audiobook and looking across the street as they build a new, like, 9-story condo building across the street from my, like, little apartment building, is, like, I'm, like, very aware of all of these things. And I felt like this book was kind of geared towards someone who might not know about this kind of stuff. And which is not to say that I'm, like, better than anyone for knowing. Like, obviously I'm not, but I literally am, like, living in this situation. So,
You know, there was a renter in the book too, Kelly.
It's true. It's true. I am evil. No, but I mean, it is something that I think about often, and that everyone, every white person living in Brooklyn needs to think about, because, you know, it's, you know, this country has made it incredibly difficult for people to be able to survive in general. But what's unfortunate is that a lot of the work historically has been in Manhattan. And because of that, Manhattan is, like, the central area where people wanted to be because it was closer to work, so it was more expensive. And so people got pushed out of Manhattan, people got pushed into Brooklyn, and, like, it keeps pushing further and further out because people can't afford to live close to where they work. And especially historically, people of color who have not had the same access, who have not had the same opportunities, you know, all of these kinds of things. But also, there are a lot of people who are taking advantage of the fact that there are these neighborhoods that are not, you know, white and shiny and developed yet, that are that are just these, like, neighborhoods where people have been living for years and years, where people have communities, and they're seen as quote unquote dangerous because they are mostly black and brown communities, which is obviously absurd. But there are a lot of developers taking advantage of this, buying up huge amounts of property for very little money in these communities and thinking, well, we'll buy this now and then we'll make our money back in 10 years when all the white people have moved over here because we keep pricing people out of these other neighborhoods. So it's like this book is very relevant and for sure is, like, saying things that are important and that people should know about. But also for me, I was like, I felt like I was reading kind of like a beginner's guide to gentrification issues, which is like not bad, but it's not what I need, I guess, or like what I am seeking right now. And if that's mm-hmm. kind of the like most important part of the story outside of the mystery, it was hard for me to, I don't know, connect on that level, I guess.
And like the flip side of that is,
to focus on what you're saying, but you have this cute baby behind you sleeping, and she's so cute.
Like the flip side of that is, I have grown up and lived my whole life in pretty rural communities.
Yeah.
And so like, while I can hear about gentrification and know it's a problem, it's different to kind of like, quote, see it, mm-hmm. you know? So like, seeing it through a book is not the same at all as living there and seeing it. But it is more of a taste for me coming from a rural place than I have had before.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Totally.
Yeah.
And I think maybe, I think like, because I'm not, I don't dislike this book. It's just that it didn't do for me what I felt like I wanted it to, or what like it could maybe do for someone else. So I'm not trying to be like negative and say that it's bad, because I don't necessarily think it's bad. I want to be clear about that.
So do you think it was bad or?
Not necessarily.
Well, let's talk about the romance part of this book too, because I don't think it's your typical romance book romance. Sydney is a Black woman. Theo is a white guy with a interesting history. And they meet in the beginning of the book on this tour. And they don't get off on the best foot together. But did this relationship work for you? And I don't mean just like, oh, is this a believable romance? But just like mm-hmm. the dynamics of this interracial relationship also kind of solving a crime at the same time.
I mean, I love a, you know, enemies to lovers trope.
Right.
Not that they're enemies, but like the kind of like dislike to like.
Just sex.
I love that trope. Me and too. So it, that worked for me. I love that Sydney never gave Theo a pass.
Yeah.
On anything. Like she pretty consistently holds him accountable for being a white man.
Yeah, I think my favorite part is when he shows up wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt and she's like, take that off.
Yeah. And she's like, I appreciate the sentiment, but take it
off. Yeah, they have, and they have like a code word for when he's being stupidly white. Howdy doody.
I loved all that. I will say, when we got to the sex scene, we're like, Todd and I are in the car. And it's dark, and the sex scene happens. And I paused, and I said, you know, she was a romance author originally. And he was like, And I said, maybe the phrase veiny shaft clued us in.
I feel like I must have slightly tuned out during that section because I barely remember the sex scene. Like, I remember them having sex, but I don't remember. And I think this is, like, where audiobooks become a problem for me, is sometimes I just start, like,
doing other stuff. Yeah,
so I feel like I didn't hear. Now I'm, like, interested and I want to go back and, like, read the descriptive details of their sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty detailed.
I like their romance. I like that the main focus on the novel of the novel isn't necessarily the romance. Like, that's part of it. It's an undercurrent the whole time. They're flirting. They're getting to know each other. But it's not, like, the number one or even number two main point of the book.
Yeah, I liked the romance too. As I said, I didn't remember the sex scene that much. But I liked their dynamic because I do like the kind of playful teasing thing. And I also just, I don't know, they both sounded kind of hot.
Oh, yeah, they did sound hot.
I couldn't help but be imagining, who is not someone I'm actually really that attracted to, but I was imagining him as Adam Driver because she called him ugly hot. And I was like, that's what ugly hot is Adam Driver.
I think Adam Driver is just regular hot. But I've had full-on arguments about this with people.
He's weird looking.
I mean, I get it, but I don't look at him and I'm like, I could get on board with that. I see him and I'm like, that guy's hot.
That's fair. But so that's how I was imagining him. Because first of all, he was supposed to be really tall and all this stuff. And then also was like, the way that she was describing him, I was like, this sounds like an Adam Driver type. Like a kind of weird looking dude, but he ends up being really hot because of
reasons.
Yeah, I mean, also, he knows his way around some nipples, which I appreciated the attention to nipple play.
Yeah.
Like,
Kelly, you're just going to have to go back and find out about that.
Like, Jesus Christ.
Is Penelope making biscuits? What is she doing?
No. She just has her paws kind of folded like little chicken wings.
Aww. Kelly, I've pinned your video just so that I can see her closer up.
She knows.
Sorry to everyone else.
All I have in the
background. Get animals in your
street. She does have little chicken wings.
Yeah, she does that sometimes where she just, I'm like, why? That can't be comfy.
She's so sweet.
What are you doing?
She's comfy. She's so comfy. Baby
she likes
girl.
In that part of my bed all day long. And then as soon as I try to go to sleep, she's like, I'm ready to wake up.
Yep.
Is it Momo? Hi, baby. Do you hear him?
No.
The little squeak.
Momo, you want to come say hi?
He heard me making kitty noises and he was like, hello, I'm here. Aww.
Momo.
Well.
Oh, I'm the one that put in the document hot.
I thought it was pretty hot, too.
Obviously, it wasn't me since I have no recollection of the sex scene. Maybe I'm just, like, at a point where I'm blocking out hetero sex scenes at this point. Yeah. It just doesn't register.
You were like, veiny shaft, not interested. I do think, though,
that most of the, despite, yes, the phrase veiny shaft, but I think a lot of the attention in the sex scene was placed on what he was doing to her body, which I...
For sure. Because it was from her perspective.
I enjoyed that.
And also, like, the veiny shaft wasn't great. Like, I wasn't loving that.
I don't hate it.
I mean, I like a good veiny shaft.
I don't want to hear it called such.
I don't mind it. It paints a picture for me.
I don't want to name it.
A picture, again, that I don't hate.
Pulsing appendage. So.
I don't love romance in books, like, in general. I don't know why. Especially usually in my thrillers. I'm not that into it. But I also like just that he felt like a sort of believable, like, trying to be woke white guy character who actually then, like, through seeing a black woman's experience starts to understand, like, not just what she's experiencing, but how he has contributed to that. Which is good.
Yeah. I think he's a good surrogate for, like, any reader who is like, oh, like, I'm a liberal white person who believes that I am not ever engaged in racist things and kind of as, like, a tool to kind of teach, like the moment with the Black Lives Matter shirt, or just like other things he says where he thinks he's being understanding and he's not, which is like a situation that I like totally can relate to as a stupid white idiot. So
yeah, life is full of learning moments for white people. tune into The Bachelor for more of that. Jesus Christ. All right. So let's get into some of the race stuff. I read a couple of interviews with Alyssa Cole, and she just said some things that I think could be good jumping off points for discussion. So this book came out last summer, which of course was around the time of like peak racial injustice awareness.
All the anti-racist books sold out in the bookstore.
Yeah. We're going to get into anti-racist reading in the next question too. But in this interview, they were talking about that, like, the first, like, you know, like, advanced copies were going out sort of right around the time of George Floyd's murder. And so, like, she thought people were kind of understanding the point of this more than they might have in other times. But anyway, she said, this book is an exploration of how maddening it can be to discover injustice and feel that no one will believe you. Or if they do believe you, they won't care, which is the reality of Black people and most marginalized groups in America. And then my whole question is just, discuss.
And go.
In the context of what happened last summer, or just generally.
Well, yeah. I have a question, which is, because I haven't read a lot of thrillers, have you guys ever read a thriller that kind of explores race in this way?
You know, most thrillers are written, like, most thrillers that are, get a lot of press are written by white people. Mm-hmm. It's a genre that's pretty heavily dominated by white women. I'm not saying that there aren't thrillers by authors of color, because clearly there are, but I think just kind of like the direction that especially like domestic thrillers have been going in, you know, since Gone Girl has been pretty like the trend is towards like a white female middle class perspective.
Or even a lot of just rich white women perspectives, too.
Yeah.
I would say usually when there's, like, a, like, that psychological element to it, where it's, like, can this person be trusted? Can she believe what she's seeing? She's starting to feel crazy or something. It's almost never based in race. It's usually, like, she's a mom. Like, she just had a baby, so obviously she, like,
Not saying that people of color are not moms and can't have babies, because they do.
Or experience postpartum depression.
Right. But, so I don't think that, I can't think of one I've read that explores race in that way.
Yeah. It seems, I think what you're saying, though, right, is that it's, like, more centered around gender issues than race issues, usually.
Yeah.
Right. Without the intersectionality that is required.
Right. White feminism, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of doing, this might sound stupid what I'm about to say, but it's kind of doing this double layered thing where Sydney is finding out strange things related to gentrification are happening in her neighborhood, and no one really believes her. But she also keeps reflecting on a time when her husband, like, told her she was crazy,
right,
and gaslit her and sent her to a mental facility. It sounded like, because she talked about remembering being strapped down. So, like, we've kind of got this comparison almost of trying to say, you know, racial injustice is happening and being gaslit essentially by society and told, no, no, nothing's happening. It's you. It's all in your head. You're just perceiving it. And then her very personal experience with I want to say mental illness, but we don't even know. We just know her husband said that, you know?
Right. Like, her personal experience with basically, like, emotional abuse, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for me, that made the bigger societal issue kind of have a nice personal foil in a way that worked well.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that.
And this is, I mean, like Susan said with the Uber scene, like having, feeling like you were in an unsafe situation and having no one really believe you or listen to you mm-hmm. is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, that's scary to me. And then this book makes me question, like, oh, well, do Black people feel like this all the time?
Yeah.
You know? Like, is this...
Mm-hmm. Well,
is this what it is?
There's so much of... I mean, if we're looking at The Bachelor, for example, there's so much of, you know, something like the Rachel Kirkconnell situation where she had these... really racist antebellum photos, and then there's mm-hmm. all these people in her comments like this isn't that big of a deal, like, you know, this is normal, basically, like, this is just, like, you know, what we do in parts of the South, like, it's just, like, normal, and it's not that big of a deal, and you're overreacting, and blah, blah, blah. It's like,
okay, but
but
if you go and stay the summer in Midsummer, and they're like, this is what we do. Right. We just, like, happen to kill some people. Right.
Well, people love to pull out the, like, you're overreacting.
Yeah.
You're being sensitive. You're seeing things where there aren't things. Like, and that's kind of where the idea of microaggressions comes in, too, because it's like someone doesn't have to overtly say, like, you know, I hate Black people. They can
right.
do things that very clearly indicate that they are feeling violence towards you. Like, for example, in the bodega when Kim is mad that Sydney supposedly cuts her in line, which she doesn't, and then says she's going to call the police, which is something that happened this past summer with, I forget their names, but the in Central Park.
Bird watching.
Yeah, the bird watching guy. And this Black man was bird watching in Central Park, and this woman was walking, this white woman was walking her dog unleashed in the park, and he calmly asked her to please put a leash on her dog because it is dangerous to unleash, to have your dogs unleashed, especially when you're a bird watcher, like, you're trying to watch the birds. The dog is gonna, like, run over and scare them. Shit like that. And then this woman started freaking out at him and threatened to call the police on him. And he recorded this video of her calling the police and telling them that a Black man was threatening her. And to tell someone that you're going to call the police, it's one thing if you say that to a white person. It's a completely different thing if you say that to a Black person, because there is a history of violence from police against Black people specifically and people of color specifically. And that is, like, I mean, that's more than a microaggression, but it's something that a white person can write off as, like, well, you know, you were doing something that was, you know, harmful to me. And so I just wanted help. So I was going to call the police. It's like, no, you know what you're doing when you say that.
And this is also, like, something that is very specifically I don't want to say defense mechanism, but, like, a weapon that white women use, because mm-hmm. white women have traditionally been able to position themselves as victims right. and, like, are kind of, like, not kind of, they're under the protection of, like, white male America, and they're aligned with that. You know, and that victimhood is how they align themselves with the white patriarchy.
And when we say they, I feel like we should be clear that we mean we, because we are white women.
Yes, we are white women. Yeah.
Like, I feel like I always end up saying they, blah, 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 as if, like, I'm not part of this.
Yeah.
Like, and I am, you know.
I mean, I know for a fact that I've gotten away with shit because I'm a white woman.
I mean, I'm positive that some of the interactions I've had with police
yes.
have gone differently.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But one thing that I think that this book is doing well, even though, like, you know, it's clear that the real estate company is in on this. It's clear that all these white people that just moved in are in cahoots. It's clear that law enforcement is involved. I think pointing all that out as, like, look how this whole system is linked against the marginalized group of people is a picture of what systemic racism is like on a larger mm-hmm. scale here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Here being America.
Right. Well, really all, yes, everywhere, but honestly. I meant
America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why some of those, like, sort of obvious, like, villainy things still kind of worked for me anyway, because it's like they started off with smaller stuff that was more like erasure instead of outright mm-hmm. racism. It was like, oh, we just mm-hmm. aren't going to mention the history of this neighborhood. And then it was like, well, we're paying you to get to sell this house, and that's this is good for you. Like, little things like that then turn yeah. into...
And, like, the comments that they would make to each other, the white people were making to each other about how the house looked before. Like, oh, it was a mess before. You should have seen yeah. it. Like, you know, stuff like that where yeah. it's, like... And it's clearly, like, it's not yeah. true. Like,
also, when I say little stuff, I mean stuff that there seems little in comparison to, like...
Yeah, well, in yeah. comparison to literally, like, kidnapping black people and testing medications right. yeah. on them, but, I mean...
But that's, like, that's what's really scary about the escalation of that, too, is that it's... They're able to do the big, insane thing because it's built up over time, starting with right. erasing history and leading to erasing right. actual people.
Yeah.
Penelope's so tired.
Oh my god, no one even cares about this book. Everyone just wants to talk about Penelope. She's
really no, cute. I was listening.
She Penelope doesn't make an appearance that often.
Look at you. Oh, she opened her eyes.
All right, I'm going to move on to there this last go. Question.
Yeah.
Can I have an interlude between 3 and 4?
Yeah.
Briefly, I just want to say, I'm so glad that no animals died in this book.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some bed bugs died.
Well, they're fine.
That doesn't count.
No. Okay. But, like, Count Basie lived, presumably.
Yeah. I mean, I think
the bodega bugs, cat.
Well, the bodega
doing great.
The cutest thing happened, like, recently when I was actually dropping off Aries to get spayed when I thought I was dropping her off to get neutered. I was, like, waiting for the car to come that she was going to carpool with. And, like, I was, like, sitting in front of this bodega. And this guy, like, got out of his car who clearly, like, worked there. And he got out of the car. And then this cat came, like, running up the sidewalk from, like, around the corner. And he was, like, it was, like, cold out. And he was, like, getting out. And he was, like, oh, you want to go inside? And the cat, like, meowed at him. And then he, like, let the cat. He, like, unlocked it and let the cat inside.
Aww.
And I was, like.
And then you so got cute. Married?
I love. Aww. No. I love bodega cats, though. They're the best.
Yeah.
There was one around, like, at the one that I go to a lot, and her name was Lisa. A kitten named Lisa. A little gray kitten.
Easily my favorite type of pet name.
Yeah. Just really human-sounding name.
Like Edward. There's
a group of, like, misfit farm animals that I follow on TikTok, and all of their names are, like, Karen. Like, there's an emu yeah. named Karen that has quite yeah. the personality. So.
Yeah, like, fuck Chelsea, but her cat being named Ryan is hilarious.
I still, one of my favorite, I said those were my favorite types of cat names. One of my favorite cat names ever was, do you remember that I went on a date with a guy who had a cat named Pants, and I just really wanted to meet that cat?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I did. I met him. He's a sweet little cat.
Pants.
Pants.
That's all. It just brought me a lot of happiness that the animals didn't get hurt, because I was very worried about it.
Yeah, I always worry about that. When an animal enters the scene, I'm like, oh no. Oh no.
In a thriller.
All right. Yeah. So, this last question. We've been talking recently on the podcast about how anti-racist reading should branch out from just strictly nonfiction books that are literally just lessons about racism. And should also include books about Black people in general, living full, complicated, happy, normal lives.
Like Sydney's life.
In it,
happy and normal.
Well, I was
complicated.
Trying to say a bunch of things that also, like, all of this is normal, because these are all normal things that happen to everyone. In an interview, another interview, which we'll link these, Cole said, I do think that people should be reading fiction as part of their anti-racist reading, because I do think that fiction provides a lot more nuance. All Black people are different, so you can get a lot of different perspectives from different authors. Nonfiction is good for some, but I also think that in our society in general, pop culture and fiction and genre fiction can be just as or more important in shaping subconscious ideas of other people. So let's talk about how this book and fiction in general, I guess, if we want to, functions as anti-racist reading. I feel like Emily is going to have things to say about this.
Sorry. I was flailing because the cat is crying at the door. But, I mean, like, obviously, like, I don't know if this is obvious, but I like fiction a lot. It's, like, my preferred genre, usually. And I think that's because... like, reading stories teaches us empathy, I think, in a way that, like, other types of other genres, it's not, like, as primary of a focus, I feel like. Like, when even, like, when you're reading a memoir, you're hearing a story, but you're very conscious of the fact that, like, this is somebody else's real story and it's not your story. And I think with fiction, because you know, reading it, that it's not, these aren't real people, it kind of, it gives you a place to, like, step into the story yourself, and feel more like it's happening to you, even if the people in the story aren't like you, which I think is why it's so important to read fiction about people who aren't like you, because, like, you don't get many opportunities to, feel what it's like or get a sense of what it's like to live different lives outside of that experience. I don't know. I just think fiction has a unique way of achieving that. And again, I'm not saying, like, other genres are bad.
It's just different.
But I think, like, that's one of the things different. I really appreciate about reading fiction. As somebody who... I like to think of myself as a pretty, like, empathetic person, and empathy is, like, really important to me. And when I used to teach literature, when I used to teach literature, when I used to be a teacher, you know, like, especially in those, like, intro-level classes, like, you have a lot of students who are like, why are we doing this? Why is it important? And I think the answer has always been, like, primarily, like, empathy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's important to... it's important to, practice empathy and to, like, learn how to empathize. And I think that fiction teaches us that. I don't know.
Teaches you how to be a good person or just, like, a functional person. Well, and I would also
add that, like, a lot of what we do is, like, consume content as a culture, as people. We watch TV, we watch movies, we, you know, read books, you know. Like, whether it's a book or a movie, like, I think this still applies as far as fiction goes, you know, watching stories, watching TV about people who are different from you is doing the same kind of empathy generation. And I think, you know, because we do consume so much, I think that's, like, a huge part of how we learn how to be people, too. Growing up, you know, and you think about the things that you thought were normal because that's what you saw. And, like, this is something that I think a lot about when I think about something like queer representation, too. Like, growing up, I didn't see very many, you know, women loving women relationships in the things that I was watching. And so for me, I always thought, like, well, you know, I might have an interest in women, but I'm so used to seeing these heterosexual relationships that that's kind of, like, what I picture for myself. Or whatever. Like, and I yeah. think, like, it's easy to sort of create a worldview based on the things that you consume. And so your worldview expands as your culture intake expands. And it's really important, like, as yeah. this mm-hmm. quote says, to not just be thinking about Black people and other people of color as, like, an assignment for you to learn about. You know, it's like,
right.
you, if you really want to expand your empathy and, like, broaden your horizons, you need to integrate this stuff into your daily intake of culture, which, like, we do constantly. That's all I do, is, like, watch shit and read shit. Like, it's so easy to just be like, I'm gonna yeah. pick up this book by a Black author. I'm gonna, like, watch a Black mm-hmm. created TV show. Like, and it's a really, like, easy and enjoyable way to, like, learn. So, yeah, I think it's really important, and I mm-hmm. totally agree.
I appreciated that one of the Read Harder books this year was reading a book about Black people that isn't about Black trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. although this book is about Black trauma, but yeah. Yeah. it is mm-hmm. also about a Black woman in this, like, leading role taking – like, in one of these interviews, Alyssa Cole said something like, yeah, to some people, it's just not even believable that, like, Black people can be out solving mysteries or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that, yeah. and, like, damn, because all these thriller books really are usually white
mm-hmm.
white women. So, I mean, like, that was, like, a part of that I didn't even think about. But I feel like we... in the last, especially in the last couple years, as a group, have tried to purposely expand what we're reading.
Well, and it's just been so much more of an enjoyable reading experience to be able to, like, talk about things that mm-hmm. I haven't considered. And like, yeah, that's part of the reason why I'm, like, reading this book. I'm like, well, I already know all this. And it's like, well, that's because I've already... you know, read a bunch of other stuff, like, and
yeah,
I feel like there's always more to consider. And, like, thinking about something like Transcendent Kingdom, which we read last time, where there were so many things in that book that were, like, revelations to me, like, just, like, one sentence that she would write about, like, her, like, the Black experience or, like, the immigrant experience. And I'd be like, I never thought about it that way. Whoa, mind-blowing. Where, like, reading this, it was a little more like, I understand this. I've heard this. That doesn't make it invalid. But, like, you know, it feels more...
They're very different. They're very different genres.
That's very true. That's very true.
like...
Yeah. But, yeah, like, I think that what she says about shaping subconscious ideas, like, a lot of what we think about the world comes subconsciously from, you know, whatever stupid show you were, like, from watching Friends or whatever. Like, these things that ingrain themselves in our culture, and then we talk to our friends about them, and we discuss, and they become part of our mm-hmm. lives. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree.
I just want to, as an aside, just going back to what you were saying about, like, how we learn about the world from, like, the literature and the movies and whatever TV shows that we consume. That got me thinking a lot about, shameless plug, about our book club it was our first book club selection in the Dream House. Like, I feel like a lot of what she's talking about in that book is that concept, right? That, like, specifically looking at queer romance, that there was a lot she didn't understand about lesbian relationships because she had never seen that.
Exactly. And the assumptions anywhere that she had based on, like, the few representations she saw, which were not necessarily accurate, or which, you know, perpetuated stereotypes.
And I think that's why sometimes I'm cautious looping back to romance. I'm just looping everything together now. Looping back to romance. I think sometimes that's why I've been so cautious when it comes to reading romance novels, is because, like, I think a lot of times romance stories perpetuate really, like, antiquated ideas about, like, how relationships should work, heterosexual or otherwise. And actually, personally, hate to love is one of my, like, least favorite tropes, because I think it perpetuates this idea that, like, a lot of men think if they just try hard enough and keep picking, that eventually she's gonna fall. Because, like, that's
bad.
That is something that's happening here in the story a little bit, is, like, she doesn't like him, and he just keeps coming back until she thinks he's hot.
Like, we know that because we're in her head that she does like him. She likes him right away.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that's one of the things, and I'm not saying necessarily, like, this is, like, totally horrible representation of it, but it's not my personal favorite or any, like, I have some issues with that idea.
I mean, I totally see what you're saying, and you're completely right. But also, like, in my own life, I'm very much a person who flirts by being mean. So it's like, it's like every kind of, like, flirtatious situation that I've had with a person has started off by, like, us kind of, like, ribbing each other and being, you know, like, unless, like, I went on my first date with a person. That's, like, different when you, like, are online dating and you're like, oh, I'm gonna meet up with this person in real life. We know that we're doing this to, like, be in a relationship. But, like, you know, anything I've had that started with, like, someone who I knew through a friend or whatever, it's always been kind of like, oh, like, we're really mean to each other. And then... But that's, like, I don't know why, but that's, like, how I show affection. So, like, if I barely know you, I'm super nice. And, like, the better that I know someone, and that's, like, a personal problem probably. But, you know, I think, like, there's that element of, like, of teasing that's fun. But there is definitely, like, a line. And it makes it harder to establish boundaries when you are kind of playing with boundaries in your flirtation and playing hard to get and that kind of stuff, which is what men sometimes assume that women are doing when they are actually just not interested.
Just not interested.
So I try to do in my personal life, I try to do a more, like, playful mean versus, like, cold and disinterested mean. Which I feel like Sydney's doing a playful mean.
But see, men are not very... But men are not very good. I'm sorry to all the men listening.
Hashtag not all men.
But I'm also not. Okay. But men are also, like, not very good at picking up, like, subtle cues.
It depends on the man.
So, like, I don't know that they know the difference between the types of mean. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of them do, but, like, a lot. Like, I don't think. Like, I know he's in the next room, but, like, I don't think Ben would know the difference.
Oh my god. I really hope he writes in and talks about how mean that was.
I actually do know the difference.
I'm not mean to him, though. You know, like, I...
Okay, I would like to object to that statement.
Ben's love language is grumpiness.
Complaining.
I think if Ben hears you say, I'm not mean to him.
You think I'm mean to him? Let me go. I'm going to go ask him right now. Hey, Ben. Actually, Ben. We need Ask a Man.
Penelope is gone.
Yeah, she keeps... I'm worried that she's going to start causing problems. Because she's woken up.
She would never. She would never.
All right, Ben is here. They say that I'm mean to you.
Now there's a little more context.
Yeah, that's not exactly what happened.
I don't think so.
They were just talking about how some women flirt by being mean.
I was saying that that's what I do.
And I was like, I don't think I do. Yeah, I was like, I don't think I'm a person who does that.
Well, you didn't say that to us. You said, I'm not mean to Ben.
I said, I'm not mean to Ben. And you were like, it's more complicated than that. Am I mean to you? That's what the... No. Yeah, he says no. So there.
No, she's not mean.
Say it in the mic.
Say it in the mic, dummy.
Mean to me. I'm sometimes mean to her.
See, I'm not
mean. He says he's mean to me.
Well, I'm just getting, I'm taking my perception of what you tell me, which is you'll text me something that you said to him, and you'll be like, I'm so mean to him.
I know, but he doesn't think I'm mean to him. I think that, but that's because I'm such a nice person.
Mean is relative.
Yeah, mean is relative. Like, to him, he's really mean. So, no, like, what I say...
See, I told you. She's going to start doing this shit.
But I'm not as mean as I used to be, so...
You are... Yes, you're not as mean as you used to be. That's true.
I need you to capture photos of that.
Is that all you need me for?
That's it. That's just... They said that I was mean to you, and I wanted your perspective on that.
Modern day chivalry.
Sorry for that detour. I just want to be validated in my own personal flirtation style, which is...
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I'm just saying, like, maybe that's why you are leaning more towards women, because I don't think men are that good at picking up the subtle differences between mean and...
It's possible, but every relationship that I've ever had with a man, like, I remember when I first started dating Jason, my ex, like... We started by him, like, saying some stupid joke that I hated, and I told him it was dumb and that I hated it, and then he, like, DM'd me the joke, like, continuing the joke, and then I told him I'm pulling out a gun right now, and then we, like, decided to go to on a date.
So that escalated.
Like, I don't know. That's just me.
And then that guy's dead now.
Yeah. Kelly. No.
He's not. And he's dead.
He's not Reggie. Dead, and he's certainly not.
Nuggie.
Okay, let's rate this
he's
book.
He's so little.
I gave
it two nuggies.
Two nuggies? That's not very stars. Many.
That's four stars is okay. Two nuggies.
Oh. I also gave it four stars. I think if I could give a half star, I'd give it a 4.5. But
I'm more
it a
of
four.
A 3.5 rounded up.
Nice.
We should just use our own system where we give it half stars because we do this.
Let me explain, because I feel like I'm rounding it up because I do feel like, sort of like we were talking about, there are not a lot of books that are doing what this book is doing. And so I want to be more forgiving about some of the things that didn't work for me, just because I feel like... It's more important that this book is doing what it's doing than that it's doing it perfectly.
Sure.
Yeah. Considering, like, just where we're at with thrillers right now. So that's why I'm rounding it up from a 3.5.
Yeah. I think I haven't rated it yet. I was thinking a 3, just pretty, like, you know, pretty solidly a 3. But again, I think... A lot of this has to do with me not necessarily loving thrillers. And I also think about this in terms of, like, I'm the one person here who really does not care about true crime also. And I think there might be a connection there. Like, I just don't care. I don't think it's interesting. So, like, for me, I think, like...
I care a lot.
Yeah. And, like, that's fine. It's just, like...
Meanwhile, I listen to true crime all day today.
Yeah, I just...
So.
I never, ever listen to true crime. Like, I just don't find it compelling for whatever reason. And, like, it's not to say that it's... That there's anything wrong with finding it compelling.
It's just not your thing.
It's just not my thing. So I think that that's... maybe what my main struggle is here, and I think that maybe my criticisms are criticisms that could be applied to probably most commercial thrillers in general. It's just that, like, it doesn't do that thing for me that needs to be happening for me to really enjoy a book. So I think, like, a 3 is probably, like, I can't imagine that I've rated any commercial thriller any higher than a 3. I know I've rated several of them 1. Sherry Lapina. I do appreciate that it's doing different things. And I thought it was well written. I liked the characters. I liked the romance element, which, Susan, you say that you don't like romance. I love romance. I love it when a romance happens. Like, I'm a sucker for
that. I like
it
in my real life. I just don't care to read about
it. No, like, I love reading it. I love watching it. Like, romance. And I always have, like, from when I was a kid. Like, that was my favorite. All I wanted to do was read, like, love stories. So I think, mm-hmm. like, that is where I'm coming from on this. So I three okay. with, like, the caveat that, like, my opinion on this should not be trusted. If you are a person who likes thrillers, like, don't listen to me, you know?
I was thinking that you were going to say should not matter.
Well, yeah, shouldn't. That's basically what I am saying.
I gave it a 4. I'm not rounding. It's just a good. 4. And unlike you, Kelly, I read 3 thrillers this year that I have given either a 4 or a 5 to. Which is
good. Please tell me it wasn't that one that we both read.
Oh, no.
Because
no.
that was not a 4-star
book. I gave that one a 2.5.
I gave it a 2, and that was
You can't give it a 2.5, Susan. Gender what did you risk. Actually give it?
You can on the reading log that I'm using. Oh, so yeah. on Goodreads, I made it a 3.
That's true.
On my
shout out. Shout out to that reading log. We should have shouted this out at the beginning of the year, honestly.
I think we did.
Did we? Tears of reading log?
I could have sworn we talked about it. But if not, then
we should link it.
We'll link it in the notes.
It's March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We will. And Tirza is going to be on the show soon, too.
Yeah.
So this feels
so we'll shout it out
appropriate.
Again.
We'll shout it out again later. But it's a great tracker, I think, is anyone else using it? Mary, mm-hmm. you're using it, right? Tirza, every single year, Tirza Price, she makes a reading log in Excel, and anyone can use it. She posts it on Book Riot every year, and it's awesome. She puts a lot of work into it. If mm-hmm. you really love, like, getting into the nitty-gritty of, like,
data,
your stats, like, I love that stuff. Like, it's not too late. It's still early in the year for you to, like, hop on this. So we'll link it in the show notes. And, at least check it out and just see, like, what's mm-hmm. going on.
I'm pretty cool.
And we're all using it this
tracker
year.
Tracker of my reading this year, which is sad. But it's really, like, I've enjoyed using it, and it's motivated me to read more. Like, mm-hmm. I really like the process of tracking it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same way, like, with everything. The more I track things, the more I'm motivated to do it, like, with anything.
And I like that the drop-down menu for stars lets you give half stars, because I usually do that. And then on Goodreads, I just round up or down based on whatever, but then your true rating is the Tirza.
Yeah,
every once in a while I will have a solid grading. Oh my god, Marie, in the background.
Oh, I know that's where he's been sitting lately, like on top of all the stuffed animals. He's so cute. Right. Yeah, we'll have to tell her when she's on the show that most of us are using that.
Oh yeah, I'll be like, can you autograph my spreadsheet? I love it so much.
Yeah, we'll talk about why she's going to be on the show later. We're excited to have her again. She's been a guest before. So, yay.
All right. Well, we did it. Let's go. Okay.
That's it. Oh, my gosh. How'd we do that? I'm going to go grab some wine for this next part.
Oh, my God. Finish it before we finish recording. So I'm not going to. Then I would also have to take off my headphones, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I didn't take off my headphones, so I heard all that. And I only had like a half glass left, so I figured I should just finish it.
I can't, because mine are like attached to the computer, so I can't like wear them away. If I could, I would.
This is a half glass, right? This isn't a full glass. This is a half glass.
Sure. I mean, that's a full glass if you're a wine connoisseur.
I'm not. I'm just trying to drink the wine. So.
That's how you aerate it, Emily. Okay, so we have some listener feedback. I'm going to start with some from Darcy for Transcendent Kingdom. So Darcy and I are always communicating on Twitter. So this is just a little bit of a kind of like conversation that she and I had about our discussion on the podcast. And I wanted to kind of acknowledge her thoughts. And so, yeah, here is some of what she said. I, like, you know, didn't put everything because then I would have had to put some of my own words, which no one wants to hear that. So Darcy from Wyoming said, Not all organized religion is about power. The faith in this book is an amazing thought. I think this is the first time I was getting kind of pissed with the conversation. I seriously hope you don't think of me like a bad person because I am a Christian. I do, however, still love you all. I totally understand where you all are coming from. It's not my place to judge. Jesus loved everyone, and we are all sinners. However, I know you and know that you have different beliefs. It doesn't mean that I will not have you in my life or say that you're going to hell. You are young. I wish that I could see you all when you turn 50 or 60. I will probably be dead by then. We all change and grow. And that's true. We do all change and grow. But I wanted to address that I do tend to be a little negative when I talk about religion, specifically about organized religion. And, you know, I've had, like, a lot of negative experiences with organized religion and religious people. So I think that that's where that comes from. But whenever I just want to say that whenever we say something like, you know, Christians, blah, 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 I'm not saying that literally all Christians are
a certain way. I mean, Mary, don't you consider yourself a Christian?
Yeah, I consider myself a Christian, but I don't feel like, you know, like if you say something like negative about capital C Christianity in general, I just think, well, I'm not doing that.
Right. Well, and
it's like when the teacher's like, oh, you kids need to be quiet. And you're like,
I am being quiet. So she's not talking to me. The same as like when we say something like men, blah, blah, blah. Like, obviously we're not talking about, I don't know.
Three of us are married.
Right. Like those men are nice. We like them.
I know I did say that Ben didn't understand subtlety earlier. So.
I mean, sometimes we are talking about them. But you know, when we're saying something negative, like a blanket statement about a group of people, like, we're not literally saying that because you are this, that means you are this, you know? And there is a lot of like subtlety and nuance to be had in conversations about religion and about organized religion. And I don't want anyone to think that I'm like immediately writing off every single person who is a Christian as a bad person, because I'm definitely not. But I do stand by the fact that, as an organized institution, Christianity has really done a lot of terrible things throughout history. And I think that that's just historical fact. But I think that you can observe parts of Christianity or whichever parts of Christianity speak to you and not be engaging in that negative stuff. And I think that religion is very personal. So
I want to say, too, just because Transcendent Kingdom was my book that I picked and I really enjoyed it, that just like surrounding the conversation surrounding religion and Transcendent Kingdom specifically. I just want to like for the record say like I really appreciated the way that the main character in that story, Gifty, explored religion. And I think I just want to be clear that, like, for me, at the end of that novel, like, she comes to a place where, like, religion has a really, like, important place in her life. And I felt very positively towards that. Mm-hmm. So I think, and again, like, I'm not quite sure which comments specifically Darcy's talking about, but I'd like to clarify my personal opinion about religion in that book. I think like what I was criticizing was Gifty's experiences with this particular church and the way that they judged her brother and like the problematic ways that judgment came down on her and her family. But in the end, I think Gifty still comes to realize that, like, she still, like, has an important connection to religion that's not connected to that church. And to me, that was positive. And so I think, like, the negativity I was feeling in that novel was more about this one church and not about Christianity.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just to clarify, like, and then again, like, that's just, like, just to clarify, like, my personal stance about religion in that novel and, like, whatever was said about it.
Yeah. I think probably it was mostly me. Can't be sure, but just saying I tend to fly off the handle sometimes when I'm talking about
it. I mean, it's also easier to, like, kind of have those big claims and come in hot when it's just us talking to each other. We're not, like, sitting down necessarily and having, like, you know, like, if I was sitting down with someone and we were going to have, like, a nuanced conversation about religion, it would be a different tone than we're just, well, like, I have feelings about a book.
And I think, like, we're all good friends, so we all, like, when we have these conversations, and I think, Mary, this is probably what you were saying, too, is, like, we all, when we have these conversations with each other, we have a lot of context coming into these conversations. Yeah. Like, like, Mary understands that when we're talking about Christianity, we're not attacking her personal beliefs.
Right.
Or we're not saying, like, Mary's stupid because she's Christian.
Right.
Like, I don't think anybody here thinks that.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
But, I mean, I think, like, but that, not just surrounding Christianity, but surrounding a lot of conversations. Like, I think we're all coming into this with a lot of, like, context to these conversations.
There is a group chat. Just from, like,
knowing each other and having lots of conversations about, I mean, we've had a lot of conversations about a lot of different things, like mental health and religion. We had a really long conversation about mental health earlier today.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I think that kind of shapes our comfort level when, like, saying more extreme things around each other, I guess.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that and also say that we are totally open to anyone telling us when we have said something that is, like, off-putting to them or whatever, for whatever reason. 'Cause, and, like, Darcy and I have also talked about this separately, and
you and Darcy's private chat,
we're best friends and it's fine, but yeah, I just wanted to mention that and say thank you for letting us know your thoughts, because I know that Darcy also really loved Transcendent Kingdom, which I think was, you know, unanimous agreement that we loved it. So thank you, Darcy, as always, for writing and listening. We look forward to your future feedback.
This is from RJ. RJ is actually going to be a guest on the podcast in a couple months.
Yay!
So you'll get to hear RJ read her own words in person.
Can't sometimes wait.
Stop it. Hi, it's RJ from Chicago. Much like your last pick, Luster, I have to thank you all for motivating me to read Transcendent Kingdom. I had seen it all over my feed, but so many books, so little time. This gem would have passed me by without your podcast, so thank you very much. I loved this episode. It was one of your best because you all were so honest and raw with your reactions to this deeply personal book. I really appreciated what you shared. I read this as an audiobook, and there were times I had to pause and cry. Same.
I feel that.
This
I really
can
do.
Be hard, deep. And Yaa Jassy created a reading experience unlike any other when it comes to loss and grief. What hit me most was Giftie's struggle to balance science and religion and how she coped with her mother's depression and the death of her brother. As an agnostic with secular Buddhist tendencies, I usually rely heavily on science for answers to life's questions. But when I was faced with loss and grief 7 years ago, I wanted the comfort that spirituality and religion can provide, even though I lack faith in my Catholic upbringing. Spoiler alert, I'm still an ex-Catholic. This book...
Susan's like, whoop whoop.
Oh, I wrote back and I was like, also, same. this book spoke to me on a level that I hadn't encountered before. I also appreciated that Giftie didn't have to make a choice between science and religion, and it's making me reframe how I look at spirituality. Switching gears, big thanks for mentioning the queer moments in the book. I had to rewind a bit, wondering if I hallucinated Giftie's crush on the sexy cashier and if she had actually kissed her friend Anne. They came out of nowhere, and she didn't acknowledge or label her sexuality, but I loved how casual it all was. Absolute goals. As always, I look forward to your next episode.
Yay!
Nice!
I'm so glad that you enjoyed it, RJ, and cannot wait to have you on the pod so that we can get your thoughts on
pod friends.
Books in general.
Which episode is she going to be on again?
Malibu Rising.
And your thoughts on Malibu Rising specifically. Which, I don't know, I'm hoping we'll have some gay stuff, because Taylor Jenkins Reid seems to write gay stuff, so.
I really want to read Daisy Jones and the Six before we get to that one, so I'm gonna do it.
I mean, as we know from spoiler about the seven lives of seven husbands of Evelyn Hugo, gay stuff. Oh my God.
Callie, you didn't do the spoiler before you said that.
I just said spoiler.
We're going to get another one-star rating. You can't talk about gay stuff without warning people.
That was the first time we made somebody really mad.
Yes.
Yeah. And we never forgot
it. It was my fault. It was me. I was the one.
That person's not listening anymore.
Yeah, I don't think that person even finished that one episode.
In fact, I think she said that in the tweet. She's not going to listen anymore. Sorry.
So that's why we can laugh at her now.
Anyway, what's on the blog?
I don't know.
What's on the blog?
Nuggy is meowing. What did you write anything? Oh, yes. Culty books, Susan. Tell us about that.
I don't have the... I switched over to so I could see all of you and I didn't see the talk anymore. Okay. Yes, I wrote about some culty books. Some fiction, some nonfiction, but all culty. So if you're into cults, and if you are into cults, you'll be excited about our next episode. We'll get to that in a minute. But if you need some more cult content, like me, check out the books.
Look at Murray. Oh my God. Emily, Mary, and I wrote about Moxie, the movie on Netflix, which is directed by Amy Poehler, and she's also in the film. But this movie is based on a book that we did for a guest, when I guested for YA Book Club, and we talked about Moxie by, I think it's Jennifer Matthew. Is that the author's name?
Yes.
So... We talked about the movie, and it was fun. Also, I think I mentioned this last time, but I have an interview with Kim Taylor Blakemore, who's an author, and I talked to her about her new book, After Alice Fell, which is a historical, psychological, mystery thriller type of book. So that was fun, talking to her. And yeah, oh my God, Murray is so cute.
What a good moo moo.
I don't think he likes that I'm so close to him right now.
Moo's like, just us stuffed animals over here.
What a cutie.
This is
Penelope.
I don't think he likes that I moved this exercise ball. Oh, I'm sorry, Moo.
Guest blogger Todd.
Who?
Me husband has written a blog about the Amber Ruffin show.
Yay.
Amber Ruffin. Yes, it is coming out tomorrow.
But
as of when we are recording. So it's already out. The Amber Ruffin show is a late night talk show hosted by Amber Ruffin, who is a comedian and is a writer for Seth Meyers. She's really funny and has like a very unique to her spin on the late night show format. She sings a lot. She tells hard truths a lot and has been very vocal about a lot of important issues. So I've really enjoyed her show. We watch it every week. And so he wrote some reasons why you should be watching it too.
Well, speaking of culty stuff, like I said, our next other sode is going to be another book. We're reading an extra book. It's The Project by Courtney Summers, which is about a girl who is trying to expose a cult that her sister is in. Mm-hmm. And that's all I know so far.
Perfect.
Yeah. But I feel like it's going to be a pretty quick read. I don't know if anyone else has started it, but
mm-mm. I'm going to do the audiobook yet again.
I'm also doing the audiobook.
Hopefully there won't be a steamy sex scene that I miss out on because I days off.
Oh, yeah, you need to go back for real. And then also on that same other sode, I have an interview with Sarah Edmondson, the author of Scarred.
Maybe you've heard of her.
You might know her from watching The Vow on HBO or from the CBC podcast Uncover Escaping Nexium.
Yeah.
I think you will really enjoy that interview. I enjoyed it.
I am excited.
Yay.
Because I just finally watched The Vow, so.
I gotta finish
watching
it. And
then I immediately watched the Stars documentary, too.
Our next book episode is Make Up or Break Up by Lily.
Speaking of romance.
It is a romance. If you're thinking like, Lily Manon, that sounds familiar. It's because this is one of me and Emily's favorite young adult authors. But she's doing a new thing and writing a book for adults. It is a romance book. I love the premise. It's like one woman has an app where it's supposed to help people work through their relationships. One man has an app that's supposed to be able to help people break up.
LOL.
Love.
And then they meet and fall in love.
Hate to love, Emily.
I know.
On this episode, we will be welcoming back Tirza Price.
Yay, we love Tirza.
We are having her on and celebrating the release of her new book, Pride and Premeditation.
So excited.
Which is the first in a series.
I pre-ordered my copy.
Me too.
My signed copy. If you listeners would like to pre-order a signed copy, we will link in the bio to the independent bookstore that she's working with to do that. Because you should buy it from an independent bookstore and not from Amazon. But so excited. So pumped to get my copy in the mail.
Yeah, I'm excited for Tirza to be back. I'm excited to read this book. It's going to be a good day.
And so just a quick note on Lily Manon. If you are like, that kind of sounds familiar. Her name is actually Sandia Menon, but she is writing under the pen name of Lily to separate her adult romance from her YA romance.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Those first kids start reading about some sex scenes. Do not want that.
Some veiny shafts.
Veiny shafts.
Yikes.
But yeah, when Dimple Met Rishi made it to my favorites of that year, I know y'all all listened to that episode way back when, but just a big fan of hers. I'm very excited to read this book.
Yeah, me too.
Yay. You can email us your thoughts, feelings, questions, etc. about anything we've ever discussed, but especially when no one is watching, at thesquad@booksquadgoals.com. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook @booksquadgoals. Our website is booksquadgoals.com. If you put /blog on there, you can look at all of our beautiful, lovely blog posts. We would love it if you would subscribe on whatever podcast app you use. And if you could leave us a rating and review, that would be wonderful, especially if you do it on Apple Podcasts, because it's really important for us to get those ratings and reviews to find new listeners. We appreciate everyone listening. And, welcome to vaccine
hell.
Hell. No, I was trying to be positive. Welcome to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Try it again.
Vaccines are starting to happen. It's exciting. Maybe we'll get out of the pandemic before 2022.
As of today, as of this recording, everyone in Mississippi can get a vaccine.
Yep.
What?
Yay.
Yep.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
I think we are pretty close to that here. Like, the parameters have gotten a lot wider, which is nice.
That's amazing. And we will have you all know that everyone on this podcast is at least half vaccinated.
I'm halfway there, baby.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to invite us over for a party.
If anyone's wondering what our stance is on vaccination,
we like it.
I didn't like how the second dose made me feel. But that's okay.
She's fine now, everybody.
I'm not there yet.
She's all good.
Yeah, I'm fine now. I don't feel like I had a microchip or anything put in me.
I'm not sure. Did I actually get vaccinated? Because I didn't have anything happen.
They just like put a Band-Aid on you.
I mean, I have the card here that says
they're like, sure, we'll do it. Yeah, here.
I just carry it around with me at all times.
Thanks, everybody.
Yay!
Oh, yeah. Bye.
Goodbye.
This has been Vaccination Corner.